Dear brethren and sisters, dear friends, in this coming hour we shall consider together a first part of this subject, Footprints of God in the Universe. To begin with, just some remarks, general remarks concerning the subject, observing the night sky. At all epochs of history, human beings on Earth were filled with deep feelings of amazement when they observed the moon and the stars in the night sky. The death of space, the impossibility to reach the stars. All these things remind us so clearly how small and how limited we are. And these are exactly the feelings that we can see already in the heart of King David, who in the 11th century before Christ wrote Psalm 8. Let's read from verse 3. When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? King David also wrote, for example, Psalm 19, where you can read in the first verse, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament sheweth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night sheweth knowledge. There is no speech nor language. Well, we see here that King David was clearly convinced that it is possible when observing the night sky, to realize that God, the Creator, exists. Well, a critical person could say, well, David was convinced, seeing the night sky, that God exists because he already believed in the creation record of Genesis that begins with the words, Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But was it really just because seeing the night sky, it is possible to conclude that God exists? Well, let's go to the pagan people. For example, Cicero, who was a Roman philosopher and politician, 106 to 43 before Christ, he wrote many books. Among them, a book entitled De Natura Deorum, on the nature of the gods. And in that pagan book, he cites a certain Quintus Lucilius Balbus, who wrote the following words. So a man without any connection to the Bible, is it possible that we are looking to the firmament and are observing the light bears at the sky, that we do not come to the conviction of God's existence? Aren't we obliged to accept that there is a Godhead, a perfect being, a mind that rules over all things, a God who is everywhere, and all things are dominated by him? Whoever throws doubts on this could also deny that there is a sun who shines on us. You see how clear the thoughts are. A person without any connection to the Bible never heard the good news of God's word, and he just could conclude, seeing the wonders of the stars, God exists. But you could go through the whole history and you will see that it was always the same. For example, one of the greatest composer of human history was Ludwig van Beethoven, 1770 to 1827. He wrote the following words: "The world has not come into existence by accidental confrontation of atoms. If we consider the order and beauty of the system in the universe, so we must understand that God exists." He was not a born-again Christian, but seeing the order in creation and in the night sky, he was absolutely convinced that God exists. He knew it is impossible to compose a symphony of Beethoven just by accidentally writing some notes. This will be only disorder. But every higher order needs somebody who plans, who gives a design. And you see in the whole creation, you see design. In the universe, design that proves the existence of God. Even a philosopher like Voltaire, who was one of the leading philosophers of the Enlightenment time, an epoch where people went astray, away from the Bible. But even Voltaire had to say concerning the universe, "I cannot imagine that this watch exists and there is no watchmaker behind it." Well, all these observations prove the truth of the words of the Apostle Paul written in Romans 1, already in the year 57 AD. Let's read in Romans 1, verse 20. "For the invisible things of Him," that will say of God, "from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse." So you see, Romans 1 clearly indicates that even the pagan people, without having seen or read portions of the Bible, they can conclude from the design in the universe that God exists. And even when they in eternity will once stand in front of the Creator, they will have no excuse why they did not repent and confess their sins to the Creator, because they knew that He exists. Now, in a second part, we will go on and consider the question, how many stars are there? We can say that visible with one's own eyes are about 3,000 stars. This means in the northern hemisphere, from Malaysia or from Switzerland or from England, from Canada, you can see about 3,000 stars. Of course, in the big cities, it is no more possible in the night because there is too much light from the houses and from the streets. But if you are really in the darkness, maybe the darkness of the jungle, and you look to the sky, you can see around 3,000 stars. But if you go to the southern hemisphere of the Earth, let's say to South Africa, you will see also about 3,000 stars, but they are different. They do not see the same stars we can see from here. So in all, it is possible with one's own eyes to see from the Earth 6,000 stars. And of course, it was always quite confusing to see all these thousands of light points. And so people already in antiquity realized that with some fantasy you can see some pictures. Is it possible to make the light off here in front, because it's not really possible to see the details? Yes, that's already better. You see, they tried to see, for example, here a kind of car, but it's only fantasy. Of course, there are no wheels, but with some fantasy you can see here a kind of car. Here, with fantasy, you could see a lion, but really it needs much, much fantasy, I would say. It is much more a swan. And so they tried to get some orientation. Here, for example, that could be a dragon. But really, with much fantasy. And people already in antiquity realized that the heaven, the face of the heaven, is changing. This is just a situation in springtime. But let's go on. Here in summertime, you see there are other images that you can see by fantasy. Or here in fall, in winter time, so it changes throughout the year. But let's read in Jeremiah 33, verse 22, written in about 600 before Christ. As the host of heaven, that is to say the stars, cannot be numbered. So in antiquity, people thought, well, it is possible to number the stars. There are about 3,000 stars. But the Bible said it is impossible to number the stars. So you had here a contradiction to science in antiquity. But you see, in the year 1610... the first human being looking to the sky with a telescope was Galileo Galilei. And at that time he realized, oh, there are not 3,000, but maybe about 30,000 stars. But science made much progress from that time onwards. And you see Mr. Schoenfeld in 1862, he established a catalog of stars in which he mentioned 324,198 stars. And he was very busy. Sometime afterwards, he put again other 100,000 stars in that list. But you see, for example, the band of white light in the night sky that we call the Milky Way is, in fact, if you look with a telescope to the sky, an enormous concentration of stars. So we always saw much more than we saw. You understand? And you have to know that every star is in fact the same what our sun is. Only these suns, they are so far away from Earth that you see them just as a little light point. But in fact, every shining star is a sun. With the time, scientists realized that the Milky Way is in fact a wonderful system of stars in the form of a spiral, as you see it here. And it is a spiral system of about 200 billion stars or suns. And the diameter of this Milky Way, we are part, together with our sun, of, has a diameter of about 100,000 light years. This is not an indication of time, but of distance. I will explain you how to understand it. The speed of light we can today measure. In 1 second, the light has the capacity to go from one point to the other at a distance of 300,000 kilometers. This is about 7 times around the Earth in 1 second. So the distance of 300,000 kilometers is just 1 light second. But now imagine 60 times this distance. This is a light minute. And now think about that distance. Time 60 times more would be a light hour. And 24 times more, this would be a light day. And now, are you already there? And then, this distance, time 365, this is a light year. And now you understand what this should be, 100,000 light years. It is really incredible. But then scientists realized that there is not only our Milky Way, but there are billions of other Milky Ways with always around 200 billion stars. So today, in the visible universe, visible by the best telescopes, we think that there are about, in all, about 10 how do you say power, yeah, 10 in power of 25 stars. So if you would like to count this number, you see, I had a problem. with a supercomputer with about 280 trillion calculation operations per second, it will take you the time of 1,132 years. So at that time, supercomputer are already over, yes? So it would be impossible to count the number of stars. And let us read in Psalm 147, verse 2. The Lord doth build up Jerusalem. He gathereth together the outcasts of Israel. He healeth the broken in heart and bindeth up their wounds. And now, he telleth the number of the stars. He calleth them all by their names. That is our God. He not just counted them, but he has a name for every star. Now, let us read in the book of Job, chapter 9, verse 9. And you have to know this is a story from the time just after the Genesis flood. So Job lived at the end of the third millennium before Christ. And in that passage he says concerning God, which maketh great Bear, Orion, and Pleiades. And then in verse 10, which doth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. So here, Job mentions several of these signs that by imagination, by pure imagination, you can see on the sky. If you put some stars together in fantasy, forming a certain image. But it's interesting to know that all the constellations of stars are stars that belong to our galaxy, to our Milky Way. You cannot see by your own eyes stars of other galaxies. So all the light points you see in the night sky, they are part of our galaxy. But Job explains that it is God who made all these stars that are visible. And it is important, today we know that these stars are all scattered among this Milky Way, to which we belong to. But in fact, it seems only to form a constellation when looking from the Earth. Because in the space, normally the stars that form a certain constellation have nothing to do one with the other. Because they are totally in very large distances in our galaxy. And just from the angle, from the point of view on the Earth, you think these stars form together a constellation. But normally, they have nothing to do with each other. There are, in all, today we count nearly 90 different constellations. And there are a few exceptions where the stars that form a constellation, they are really directly connected in the space of heaven, of the sky. But it's an exception, normally not. And here you understand already how stupid astrology is. Yeah, because these signs, for example, the signs of the zodiac, these stars have nothing to do one with the other. It seems only that they are put together as a constellation from the point of view on Earth. And even more, it is pure fantasy to see a bear or to see a lion. Because you could also say, I do not see a bear, I do see a swan. Yeah. So, what about to speak about a constellation who has the strength of a lion? And it could also be a singing swan. Now, a very interesting passage you find also in Job 38:31. Where God himself speaks to Job, canst thou bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the bands of Orion? That is very interesting because the cluster of the Pleiades is really an exception among the constellations. These stars, with your own eyes, you can maybe see 9 stars really near one to the other. And if your eyes are not so good, you see maybe only 6 stars. So it is an exception because today we know that these stars of, you see them, the Pleiades here with the telescope, they are really bound together by the force of gravity. And they are flying in the same direction in our galaxy together. And God says, canst thou bind the cluster of the Pleiades? But the verse goes on, or loose the bands of Orion. Here, you see, no, you don't see. Here is Orion. Maybe I have a better picture. Yes, yes, here. You see Orion, these typical stars here, these four stars, and in the middle, you see three stars very near from one to the other. So by fantasy, also in antiquity, people thought that this is a man stretching out his arms and his feet, yeah? And here is a girdle, the band of Orion. But God says now to Job, canst thou bind the cluster of the Pleiades? Or loose the bands of Orion? Speaking about these three stars that you can see very well during winter time. Now, today, we know with the help of modern instruments that these three stars really are flying away from each other. But it is absolutely impossible by your own eyes to see this fact. Only by the modern instruments it is possible. But you see, in the book of Job, you read, or loose the bands of Orion. If the Bible would say, can you bind together the bands of Orion and loose the cluster of Pleiades, then it would not be like the reality. But it is exactly correct how you read it in the Bible. Another passage, also in Job 38, verse 32. Canst thou bring forth Mazarot in his seasons? Or canst thou guide the great bear with his sons? The term Mazarot means the signs of zodiac. These are the constellations that are used in astrology. But you see already, also in the following point, why astrology is so stupid. They choose among nearly 90 constellations, just 12 that should have a significance for humanity. But Orion, for example, does not be a constellation that should have an importance in astrology. Or Orion, no importance. Or the bear, no importance. Just 12. This is absolutely subjective. They choose some constellations, they have a significance together with the planets, the sun and the moon, but the other, they are without significance for astrology. So it's absolutely stupid. But it is interesting, already in antiquity, the human beings realized that during the year, you have every month a different constellation just at the point where the sun is rising in the morning. And it changes each month. So by this, you can calculate the year in 12 months. And it is exactly what we read in Genesis 1, that God made the stars in order that it would be possible to determine years and seasons. So the sky is really a watch. And by this you can count the years, because the constellations are becoming always the same after 1 year. And by the signs of the zodiac, you can divide the year in 12 parts, which means 12 months. And then by the different phases of the moon, you can divide the month in 28 days. And by the position of the sun, you can divide each day in different in different hours and in two parts, night season and light season. And God says, "Canst thou bring forth Matzarot?" It is God who gave this watch or this this ability to be a watch into the constellations of the stars. Just a remark concerning the Great Bear. You see, what is often called the Great Car was considered in antiquity, with together with more stars around it, as a bear. You see here the legs in front, behind, oh, with fantasy, of course, yeah? And then you see here this typical three stars behind. These are the three sons of the Great Bear. So the next time you will see this constellation, you will find the three sons, the young bears. Now, a third part of our lecture I call Laws of the Sky. Already in the book of Job, chapter 38, verse 33, we read how God says to Job, and again, I insist, in the third millennium before Christ, "Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven?" So we learn from the Bible there are laws, ordinances in the universe. And really, through the time of history, human beings realized the laws, and they learned how to describe them with mathematical formulas. Let us just consider the system of our sun and planets. We have in the center of the system our sun, and around it eight planets. You see, I'm quite modern. In the past we learned nine planets, but Pluto is today out because of good reasons. I will just explain. We speak about eight planets that have dozen of moons. But there are still other planets, and Pluto makes part of them, who have a very particular way to go around the sun, and they are called dwarf planets. And we know today not only Pluto, but also others who make part of this group, the dwarf planets. So, eight planets, dozen of moons, several dwarf planets, and then there are uncountable meteors. These are little or larger stones that are flying around the sun, and especially, as you see here, in the illustration, we have first four planets: Mercury, Venus, Earth, and Mars. And then you have here a girdle of the meteors. It is plenty of stones flying around the sun. So if you once make a journey to Jupiter, the next planet, make attention, very attention here in this region. It's very dangerous because of these meteors. And then you see we have again four planets, Jupiter, Saturn, and so on. And what is interesting, the inner circle of four planets are all planets of stones. And then you have the girdle of the meteors, and then four planets that are in the form of gas. Oh, there is a design. And there is even a design in the distance. When you count the distance from the first to the second planet, from the second to the third, from the third to the fourth, and so on, you see a typical mathematical formula. It cannot be accident, because the distances are following a mathematical rule. And in addition, we have several comets that are going around the sun together with all these planets. So these things have been realized especially in the time of the 16th century, when modern astronomy began to be used. And in this time, Europe was under a deep impression, because people like Mr. Newton and Kepler, they were able to describe the laws, how the planets exactly go around the sun, and why the planets are attached by gravity to the sun. They could explain and calculate exactly the things by mathematical formulas. So Europe had at that time been under the strong impression of God's mightiness and wisdom. And this gave a strong impression on music. This was a time of Baroque music, the time of Bach, Handel, and Vivaldi. And all these composers, even those that we cannot call born-again Christians, but they were confessing Christians at least. Bach was a very real believer, a born-again Christian. But all they were under the impression that we should make music to the glory of God, and we should reflect the order and the design we can see in the universe in the music. So in the Baroque time, they composed many fugues. This a fugue is a musical piece with several voices, but every voice has his own life, is in a certain way independent. But they put these voices, these different voices together in a way that there was never chaos, but according to mathematical rules. For example, Bach wrote a fugue with five voices for piano, and the same melody he brings in one voice, then at the distance of several tones the same melody in another voice, and then at a distance of some notes again the same melody, and so on, five times. Never chaos, it's just harmony. And at a certain point in this B-flat fugue of the Well-Tempered Piano, he put the voice a first time, and just at a distance of one tone in the second voice, at a distance of one tone in the third, fourth, fifth, and there is no chaos, just harmony. So this was creationist music to the glory of God. And you see, this could never be the music of the atheists. They like this harmony, but it is against their worldview. For them, it would be better to hear Schoenberg or John Cage with that's music that is just accidental and chaos. I mean, the music of John Cage and others. This expresses their worldview, but it is not agreeable to hear that music. And so it is interesting that atheists like what is against their worldview, and they may hate what is in fact according to their worldview. Now, I explained already the design of our Milky Way, our galaxy, with about 200 billion stars. And here again, the words of Job, "Knowest thou the ordinances of heaven?" Today we know that these spiral galaxies are going around the center. All the stars together, they are moving. But in the galaxy, when the stars are moving around the center, often there are systems of two suns that are flying together, like you see here. Around the center, they approach the center, they go out. And at the same time, they are going around the center of the galaxy. And there are other stars, they have always the same distance from a center. And in this way, together, they are flying around the galaxy. But there are also triple systems. You see, three stars, three suns that are going around in this way. It's just wonderful. They are dancing. And you see, you can think that around every sun, there are planets that are flying around them, and around the planets, moons. Everything is in movement. But there are also quadruple systems. Four stars that are flying together in different manners, as you see them here. It's just wonderful. And no chaos. Order, design. I told you already that by our own eyes we can see only stars of our own galaxy. But at the time, I should add the following remark. It is possible from the northern hemisphere to see a white nebula called Andromeda. And this white nebula that you can see with your own eyes is again a galaxy with around 100 billion stars. But you cannot see single stars, you cannot see a constellation. But this nebula is in fact another galaxy with 100 billion stars. And from the southern hemisphere, you can see two such nebulas that are also, in fact, galaxies with around 100 billion stars. Andromeda, that we can see from the northern hemisphere, is at a distance of 2.7 million light years. Now, science has made great progresses in the 20th century. And scientists tried to make research in a systematic way. So they tried to completely research in the area of space with a radius of 5 million light years. So you see here on this picture, in the center you see our Milky Way. Yeah? And you see, with a radius of 5 million light years in the space, so like a sphere, they tried to find out the position of all the other Milky Ways, spiral galaxies, that you can find in this space. And you see, there are many of them. Today, all these galaxies with around 100 billion stars in each point, we put them together and call it the local group of galaxies. And we are in the center. But they went on and tried to make research in the area of space with a radius, again here, not diameter, but a radius of 100 million light years. And now you see here many, many, many light points. These are not stars. Each point is, again, a spiral galaxy, a Milky Way, with around 100 billion stars. And in this space, you find about 2,500 galaxies. And we call them today the Virgo supercluster. of 2,500 galaxies. And then they went on to make research of the space with a radius of 1 billion light years. And what do you see then? You see all these areas that are very bright are clusters, superclusters of galaxies. So like this would be a cluster of thousands of galaxies here also. But do you realize that these superclusters are always around a massive vacuum hole? Do you see that? It's really systematic. So they are not just grouped in an even way, but they are always grouped around massive vacuum holes. In these vacuum holes, there is nearly nothing. This was really a surprise of the last years. Why is it such? And then they went on. You see here the area of space with a diameter of 13 billion light years. And that's our universe. Here at the frontier, you see just the end of what is visible today. It goes on, of course, but what is visible today. And you see it is all put together of super clusters of galaxies around massive vacuum holes. This was really surprising. And now let us read in Genesis 2, in the creation record, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had made." Now, speaking about the stars, the Bible uses the term host. In Hebrew, tzvaot, plural of tzava. Tzava means an army, a military army. And you see, when you just look to the sky, you see something like a chaos. All these 3,000 stars, yes? You would not think at that moment of an army, because an army is very well ordered. It begins, there is a group of one man and maybe five soldiers. But this little group makes part of a larger group. And this larger group, again, is a part of a still larger group, and it goes on up to the divisions. The divisions of the army are the large groups that compose together the army, and above all the divisions is the general. Now, you understand better the term in the Old Testament, also in the New, when God is called the Lord of hosts, Adonai Tzvaot. This means that God, like a general, is above all these armies, all these superclusters of galaxies, and above all these local groups of galaxies, and above each galaxy, and above every sun system in the galaxies. This is our God, the Lord of hosts. Of course, there are more meaning in it, because tzava is also a term used in the Bible for the angels. So the Lord of hosts means also that God is above all the divisions of the above all the armies of the angels. And the term is also used for the armies of the nations of this world. And so this means also the Lord of hosts is the God who has in his hands all the armies of the world, of the nations. And he can use them in order to fulfill his plans in history. And the term host or hosts is also used in connection with the earthly people of God. So God has also the army of Israel in his hands in order to protect his people when attacked by his enemies. So all these meanings are included in the name the Lord of hosts. But on the moment, we would like just to think about the one true God who is above all these superclusters of the universe. And you see, in the center, there is the Virgo supercluster with 2,500 Milky Ways. And in the center of the Virgo cluster, the local group, you remember? And then in the center of the local group, our galaxy. And in that galaxy, between two spiral arms, our sun and the earth around it. Why do I tell you that when you will be once lost in the universe that you find the way back, yeah? Now, let us just have a look into the deepest universe possible today by the Hubble telescope. You see, each light point here you can see is a galaxy with around 100 billion stars, suns. But you see, they are very large and very little. They are more far away. But you see also different colors, and you can see those that are quite red. These are the stars at the end of the visible universe. So at the distance of about until 13 billion light years. And we read now in Jeremiah 31, 37, "Thus said the Lord, if heaven above can be measured, I will also cast off all the seed of Israel for all that they have done, said the Lord." So today it is clear, it is absolutely impossible to measure the universe. Because it was possible to see until about 13 billion light years, but the universe goes on. It is impossible to measure. But the Bible always said it. And in order to say that God will never reject Israel, never put Israel away, never replace Israel by the church, he said, if heaven above can be measured, then he will cast away Israel. Just to say that he will never do it. But you can tell the enemies of the earthly people of God, you don't have to make an atom bomb. Try just to measure heaven. And then let us read in Jeremiah 23:23, "Am I a God at hand, said the Lord, and not a God afar off? Can any hide himself in secret places that I shall not see him, said the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, said the Lord?" Now, this passage explains that God is omnipresent in the whole universe. Even if you would go to the farthest away, Milky Ways, 13 billion light years away, the farthest visible Milky Way, God is there. You cannot flee. He is everywhere. But, interesting, he is not only the immanent God everywhere in the universe, but he is also the transcendent God, because he is also in paradise. This is not part of this universe. He is immanent and also transcendent and omnipresent. But very important, he is not part of the universe. Because in the pagan religions, they believe the universe itself is Godhead. So So everything is God. What you can touch, the Hindus think even they are God because they are part of the universe. But the Bible clearly distinguishes between the creator and the creation. Already in the first verse of the Bible, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So we learned at school, the subject of the sentence is God in nominative. And then the object is the heaven and the earth in accusative. So like in grammar, we can distinguish between subject and object. So we have to distinguish between creation and the creator. He is everywhere in creation, but he is not a part of creation. That's why worshipping nature or worshipping forces in nature, this is idolatry. Because the creation, the nature is not God, but God is everywhere in the creation and even beyond. But, for example, in Buddhism and Hinduism, they do not know a transcendent God. Even they are speaking about transcendental meditation. But in fact, they do not know what is transcendent. Transcendent means that it is beyond this universe. But for them, only the universe is reality, existing, and this should be Godhead. Now we will go on this evening by the next subject, the expanding universe.